politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for our life, liberty, and property here at CR Podcast on this Thursday, the 18th of April, a very important date in history, the original Minutemen warning of that first sign of trouble. The Redcoats are coming. The day, of course, in 1775 of Paul Revere's ride warning about the British coming. Today we face something much worse because the enemy is much more tyrannical, anarcho-tyranny mixed in, and it's within. And then we have a fake opposition, and then a fake opposition to that opposition within. It's sort of like all these people nowadays, we have a bigger industry than ever before, claiming to know what time it is. Meaning that they are the modern day Paul Revere's. Warning that, yeah, I mean, there's a problem. We have a uniparty. We have, you know, it's not just the Democrats, but Republicans. We have a bigger movement than ever saying that. Except they are the ones that actually don't know what time it is, or worse, subvert our cause and deliver us into the hands of the enemy. It would sort of be akin to Paul Revere saying the Redcoats are running, rounding up the Minutemen, and then delivering them strategically into the forces of the other side. I have never seen anything this eerie, where there has never been a time where the Republican Party has so needlessly and gratuitously screwed us 8 years into this MAGA movement, when we should firmly have control over this party, because we should have been electing red state Republicans to state office, federal office, up and down the ballot. We should have been able to get a good speaker. We should have been able to, if all else fails, have the man who controls and is friends with all those top leaders, Johnson first and foremost, he should be able to control what they're doing. And yet, it's like everyone's complaining in the abstract. I don't like Johnson in the abstract. I don't like Ukraine funding in the abstract. I don't like what the uniparty does in the abstract. I don't like rhinos in the abstract. Yet, when you actually have the concrete legislation building, and we've been warning about each step of this from the first day of this Congress on, you know, January 3rd, 2023, I gave you a vision of what we're going to go through, the debt ceiling, the budgets, the authorization bills. You know, then I said that, you know, even after he screwed us on the budget, we have FISA coming, then he wants to pass the standalone Ukraine bill. And we always mobilize too little, too late, and direct our fire where it doesn't go. But more than ever, people are starting to get upset. But again, they're always misdirecting and not understanding where the problem resides, that they are contributing to this subversion, to this misinformation, this false hope that it's all a matter of one man being elected at one date, rather than dropping that fake stick that they have, still holding on to it. Well, something's better than nothing. At least Trump, or at least elect this Republican, is better than this Democrat. Drop that fake weapon so you could use your hands to actually build a gun. We talk about this with the Freedom Caucus all the time. We have a Paul Revere. We have something that we could build upon. But we're not going to do that until we drop the false idol. So I want to get through some of what we're seeing in the conservative movement, as well as the details of what is going on in Congress. Very fluid. I was going to have one of the members on, but they're meeting in Rules Committee. So we'll have to do really a post-analysis tomorrow with either Chip or Massey, one of these guys, Ralph Norman. First, our sponsor today, very exciting, Freedom Ordinance. Okay, so here's the deal, folks. We talk a lot about handgun training, but for the first time in our lives, we face the proposition of ubiquitous anarchy. It's not just kind of the one-off thug. There's certainly a lot of that, but mass insurrection. So these Hamas riots that you're seeing, these are test ops that we saw on Monday. It's gonna be quite the summer. There's no question about it. Make sure you are armed with a rifle. A rifle is really what you need for such ubiquitous threats where you're going to have multiple attackers. And I recommend the Freedom Ordnance FX9 pistol caliber carbine. So you get the rifle, you know, the 16-inch barrel, where you have the utility, the dexterity of a rifle that could defend yourself against multiple attackers. But the thing about 9mm, it is so smooth, it is so quiet, and everything we stress here is about training. Meaning, you don't want to fake 2A, like we fake everything in politics where we don't actually live it. You have to train. And look, let's face it, to train with rifle caliber is more than twice as expensive than 9mm rounds. The beauty of the Freedom Ordnance FX9 is that not only does it, you know, work with 9mm operating, but also, here's the thing, it fits Glock magazines. So you could just have as many, most of you have a lot of Glock magazines in stock. It is, the material is American made. The company is veteran owned and operated. Again, very, very high quality, very smooth. I have never gotten a jam in with several thousand rounds put through my FX9. So again, freedomordnance.com, and ordnance, by the way, is ordnance.com. And then if you put in promo code Daniel, you'll receive an extra 17.76% off. Yes, that famous date in history. That's a lot, folks. Okay, you're talking about, I mean, potentially hundreds of dollars in savings. This is only, I'm the only one with this code. 17.76% off. And by the way, just real quickly, they have another product, the FG15, which is an accessory. It's a grip that has a Gatling function instead of a trigger. So those that suffer from trigger fatigue with their training or have reduced finger or hand strength, a disability, this is something that really makes it a lot funner to pull that trigger. Instead, you have this Gatling function. It's fun. It's rapid. So again, freedomordnance.com, promo code Daniel. Do not miss out today. All right. So let me start off with an analogy, with this abstract versus concrete conservatism or bastism or populism or whatever you want to call right of center politics today. You have this king that everyone loves, and everyone's like, he's going to take care of the queen amazingly. And shortly after moving into the palace, suddenly a bunch of the king's top ministers, servants, butlers start abusing the queen. I mean, just really working her over and doing it right in. So everyone's like, okay, where's the king? I mean, doesn't the king love the queen and the queen loves the king and there's such a great relationship there? Well, how does that happen? And then you look and the king's standing right there. And then you have, you know, some of the courtiers on the side, the men of the king's court, like, what the hell? These servants are, get them out of here. Who, what's going on with these servants? These servants are betraying the king. But the king's right there. And then finally the king speaks up and you know, it's not just implied in his inaction, but actually says, look, you know, I'm not so happy about this, but this needs to be done. And the head of the servants that's doing this has my full support and rebukes those who want to throw him out of the palace. And they continue. The stupid guy, the stupid minister, the stupid butler. It's like, if you're not taking your appeal to the king, what the hell is the purpose? It's bizarre. And this is what I'm watching. So everyone's, you know, roundly condemning Johnson's plan. But it's like they're missing the point here. It's gotten so bad that Don Jr. is on Twitter blowing up Johnson, blowing up the Ukraine funding, and we're all saying, hey, Don, did you pick up the phone and call your dad, who said as early as February this idea that Johnson literally put into writing that, you know, we're going to make a loan to Ukraine that they don't have to pay back? And then he reiterated it last Friday without even being asked about it. He said it on his own. It's like, what do you want from me? What am I supposed to do? Now, I want to give credit. There are two senators that have broken the code of silence. So there's this code of silence around Trump that you're not allowed to observe where the problems are flowing. You could focus on everything but the man himself. Which again makes no sense, because the entire purpose of Trump was to get away from these sorts of people and mentality and priorities and legislation. And yet when he supports it, it's like we're silent. So then what's the point? All you did with Trump is to come full circle and harden the support for the very things that we tried to get rid of. So Rand Paul did actually ding Trump for supporting it. And to his credit, J.D. Vance, pleasantly surprised, did say, he responded to Don Jr., put out a tweet, why are these GOP leadership losers like Mike McCall pushing a bill that would do the bidding of Democrats and hurt my father's ability to negotiate an end to the war between Russia and Ukraine? McCall is a globalist who puts America last. J.D. Vance puts America first. So J.D. actually responded. The GOP's, where is this? I'm certainly bothered by it. Perhaps Mike Johnson should stop going on TV and telling the world that Donald Trump endorses every piece of his ridiculous betrayal. Now, even JD, if you notice, he did a little bit glancingly. Well, you know, Johnson needs to stop saying that Trump is supporting it. Well, I mean, the direct thing is, it's not that we need to rely on Johnson claiming in a private conversation that Trump is supporting it. It's that Trump has said at least two times blatantly that he supports both the Ukraine funding and Johnson as speaker, and roundly condemns any effort to get rid of him. But, you know, baby steps. I am glad that he's broken it. By the way, just FYI, speaking of Mike McCall, I didn't mean to talk about him, but Don Jr. singled him out. Fun fact, you know, again, Mike McCall has been horrible. He was the chairman of Homeland Security. Now he's the chairman of Foreign Affairs. Horrible member from Texas, stealing a perfectly good seat. In November of 2021, so when we had months to build a primary challenger to McCall, and I think we did have then, for the last midterm, this was two elections ago, or one election ago, not this past one, Trump endorsed McCall in the primary, not just the general, even though McCall had previously said that Trump, quote, may have very well committed impeachable offenses on January 6th. And then Trump, of course, tweeted out his typical thing. Mike McCall is doing an incredible job for Texas. He works hard to protect our borders, defend our now under siege Second Amendment, and support our military and veterans. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? You know what? Let's just go directly to the quote. You know, speaking of this, so Johnson was on with Jake Tapper yesterday, and Tapper directly asked him about Trump's position on this Ukraine funding bill. Here's what he had to say.
Person, have you talked to Trump about this plan, this legislative plan, in terms of how you're introducing these foreign aid bills? And ultimately, will he have your back?
Oh, I think he will. I was just with him on Friday down at Mar-a-Lago, and we had dinner together, and my wife was with me, and we had a great visit. We talked about a lot of things, all the politics going on in the country, and he said at a press conference we had there together that I'm doing a very good job, and he supports me and all of that. Listen, I think this is all going to work out. I think it's going to be fine. I did tell the president the plan on all of this, and I think he clearly understands why we're running this play and why we need to do this. I think this sets up the next election, the next administration, the next president, and I believe he's going to win in a better position.
Okay, folks, so you heard that. Johnson affirms Trump's support. I told him the plan. He understands it. He understands why we're running the play. I spoke with him. And again, we don't need to rely on private conversations. Trump said this publicly. And it sets him up to be strong for his next presidency. It's always a matter of the next thing. Again, the same arguments that we always hated. But it's this weird code of silence. We're not going to be able to get beyond this until we recognize the guy's a loser. It is what it is. And, everyone, by the way, is complaining now. Everyone's complaining how I think people are commenting off of Charlie Kirk is now starting to like raise alarms that we don't even have field offices in critical states and we're not winning this thing. So there's two elements about this election. Number one, Trump's entire image, baggage, and messaging will not turn around any of the suburban voters that we need to win. And in fact, we're bleeding more. And number two, we don't have a ground game. Now, the former no one wants to recognize because they can't see fault in that. But the latter, people are starting to recognize, oh, whoops, we're not winning this thing. There's a big problem with ground game. But again, it's all in the abstract. But when it matters, why do you think I coined this term, the issues that matter in the way they matter at the time they matter? Because I wanted to decipher and differentiate from what everyone else is saying. We all broadly kind of agree on the same things. But then there's subtle differences, but they make all the difference. Because they never train their fire at the time in the way it matters. And if you sleep through those strategic points, it doesn't matter. So, for example, there's this big influencer that's, in the Trump ecosystem that put the following out. The GOP's decision not to fire Mitt Romney's niece, that's Rona McDaniel, before last month has put the party in a real disadvantage. We are way behind on fundraising, the lack of infrastructure on the ground to win. We may have the votes, but we don't have the organization. They actually don't have the votes either, but fine. Okay. So I'm like looking at this thing. I'm thinking, dude, who is responsible for not getting rid of Rona until last month? We literally had a race for RNC chair the previous year. We had Hermeet Dillon, who was universally liked on all corners of the right. DeSantis endorsed her. Everyone else endorsed her. A lot of MAGA people endorsed her. But Trump made calls for McDaniel. Like, what do you want from me? And then every time I point this out, I'll inevitably get blowback on Twitter. Shut up, Daniel. Ron DeSantis is over with. I'm like, you idiots. Do you not understand this is not about Ron DeSantis or an election? They project their own way of thinking on me that everything is always about an election. I'm like, no, actually, it's about governing on the days in between the election. So even though the primary's over, that's the time to pressure your leaders. And the same way we failed to properly pressure McConnell and Boehner and Johnson and Ryan over the years, even more so, you're failing to pressure Trump himself. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, shut up, we had a primary. No, it's not like you're only allowed to focus on issues during an election. Actually, you focus on the issues when they matter and the way they matter at the time they matter every day of the year. And if you have Republican leaders screwing you, you need to call it out and pressure them to move to the right. Certainly the guy who has the greatest relationship with the base, and he's also by far, by a mile, the most influential. And so much so that Johnson does not do anything without his support. It's just so weird. And all the more so, actually, now is the time to do it. Because, again, when it was during the primary, it was viewed as like, oh, well, because everything's personal. You want DeSantis. Okay, well, maybe that would have been a better idea, but fine. Now maybe we could do it cleanly without you feeling threatened of losing your grift. You're not going to lose your grift. He's your nominee. So no matter what, he's going to be the nominee. So maybe now we should actually all unite and move him to the right. But no, we're not allowed to do that. Everything's always in the abstract. But let me, let's go through some of the details on the actual legislation. Again, this is very much in flux. First, this segment on the show is sponsored by our friends at fastgrowingtrees.com. Folks, we now have, it's funny, I have to wait until the next garbage collection. We have tons of these big boxes at our door, big cardboard boxes. Why? Because we have tons of plants and trees that have been delivered directly to our door within 2 days. They are fast growing and also fast delivering. Over 2 million people have now ordered from fastgrowingtrees.com. Save yourself the annoying trip of, you know, putting your seats down in your SUV to try to bring all your stuff, and it dirties your car, and the plant falls out, gets decapitated, and the soil spills out in your car. You get the highest quality trees delivered within a day or two. You go to fastgrowingtrees.com, you can see they have everything under the sun. High, hardy quality, outdoor and indoor as well. So that means if you're in a northern climate, you could actually grow. We have mango, we have lime, we have avocado, you know, even though we're mid-Atlantic region, but we grow that indoors. We have a lot of just nice beautification trees like azaleas and crepe myrtles outside as well. We probably ordered about a dozen so far from fastgrowingtrees.com. So utilize their spring specials today by going to fastgrowingtrees.com and using promo code conservative at checkout, getting an additional 15% off. You know, the word conservative might be meaningless everywhere else now, but it will be meaningful at fastgrowingtrees.com to get you 15% off the best quality door-to-door delivered trees. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply at fastgrowingtrees.com. Offer code conservative. So, folks, I mean, every time you feel that these guys could not hit, or like they hit bottom and they can't get worse, they do. And the reason is, the reason why we have this ground and pound, because as long as they're doing the ground and pound, okay, I'm sorry for getting a little bit too vivid here on the queen, but as long as the king is looking by and nodding approvingly to them, and you don't take the appeal to the king, it's going to continue happening. So now it's at the point where, so again, it started out, we're going to give up the leverage on must-pass bills, even on 90-10 issues. And I just want to illustrate how absurd it is. The border is such a problem now. They have so many amazing talking points they could have fought on that now Nevada Senator Cortez Masters, whatever her name is, whatever that Democrat senator is, Cortez Masto, one of her staffers was killed, and now it turns out it's an illegal who was let in March 2021 and then paroled a few months later by the Biden administration. Okay, I mean, that's how ubiquitous this problem is. They have great talking points they could totally focus on, but they gave it all up. And then now their new thing is that standalone legislation that the Biden administration demands, the House GOP leadership works with Biden, steamrolls his own Rules Committee members to get to the floor. And we saw that, we talked about this yesterday with not just reauthorizing FISA 702 after they were caught spying on the Trump campaign, but actually radically expanding its scope. So it's funny, with Ukraine, we talked about yesterday how, you know, they were doing the classic GOP compromise where instead of the Senate bill, the, you know, the is $62 billion, So we're going to do $48 billion for Ukraine, and then we'll leave out the Hamas funding. Well, it turns out it's the full Senate bill. It's not even like a little bit. So the full, you know, $60 billion for Ukraine, exactly as Trump prescribed, made it a loan, but then the president can forgive 50% of the loan after November, and then the whole thing after 2026. Again, that is literally Trump's quote in February in South Carolina. If they don't pay it back, that is fine. That is a quote from Trump that's literally codified in the bill. So again, Trump had foresight of it. It's exactly what happened. It's the full Senate amount. $481 million for medical bills and legal fees of Ukrainian refugees coming to the U.S. And then, by the way, there's a separate Taiwan. So that's one bill. Then the second bill is a Taiwan bill, which, again, like, our government is bought and paid for by China, owned by China. Our culture is China. You know, throwing a couple billion at Taiwan is not going to save them. It's similar to the Israel dynamic that at a policy level, we're so against Israel and then throw money at them that's ridiculous. But anyway, the Taiwan bill, it has a provision in it that allows Biden to redirect the funding to Ukraine. It's awesome. These guys are so good. Man, I love it. And then, so then the third bill is the, I'm sorry. Sometimes you just gotta laugh. These guys are so good. So then the third bill is the Israel bill. So the GOP House Appropriations Committee wrote up a summary of it. And in the summary, I saw something like $24 billion for Israel. I was like, what the heck? I was like, I thought it was $14 billion. And then I read the line items and I added it up and it only adds up to $14 billion. I was like, okay, well, where's the extra 10? And then it turns out there's a provision in it, $9 billion for Hamas. So, jeez. Oh my gosh. Okay, I got to get it together here. Oh my gosh. It's been a long week. So they were too embarrassed to put out to the Republican conference, you know, because that's what the summary is. It's a messaging for the GOP members. They didn't want to put in there that within the Israel bill is $9.1 billion for Gaza humanitarian aid. You know, like you just like drop in aid and it magically gets to the needy and poor people, you know, that are starving, but then you see them on the beach and they're having a good time and no one's starving. But, you know, because so many were killed. By the way, someone has a great way of debunking the 32,000 Gaza deaths, civilian deaths, and they brought it down to at most 5,000. If you take their own reports, because a lot of it, they're counting all mortality. You know, people do die, like seniors. They literally count every person who died. All sorts of other things. And then also, Israel killed 10,000 Hamas fighters. So they count that as well as civilians. But anyway, you know, you just like randomly get it in there and Hamas won't get the aid, of course, no. So we're literally funding Israel, but then funding Hamas. And by the way, you know what that means when you fund humanitarian aid? That means that they can't do their operation. Meaning the humanitarian aid, it's not just that it's morally wrong and you're giving it to Hamas. It's that what that does is then it totally, and it's done by design, it negates the entire purpose of giving Israel weapons because they can't do the op. Because then they have to have humanitarian card. Why do you think despite all the ordinances that Israel dropped on Gaza, Hamas still has a lot left? Because what happened was Gaza has three sectors. Okay, the north is Gaza City, the midsection is Khan Yunis, and then the bottom is Rafah. So they took control over the top two, but then they pulled out most of their people by now and gave it up. But they after each tranche, so they warn people, leave Gaza City. Now, when you're trying to attack an enemy, do you warn them where you're going to attack? No. But Israel, you know, again, it's hard to blame them. They were basically raped by the Biden administration that this is what you have to do. So they went to the bottom two. And then they said, Warren, we're going to go into Khan Yunis. So they all went to Rafa. So that's where they're parked right now. And then why do you think Biden allowed them to do the first two but not the third? Is it that Rafa is more important? No, it's that that is the final one where they remain. So you're not allowed to destroy Hamas. So like, even from a pro-Israel perspective, I wouldn't even vote for this bill, even if it was paid for, because you're funding Hamas with it and the humanitarian charade. The humanitarian charade is the human shield against Israel's op. Like, it's literally like funding Army A's missiles and Army B's missile defense. Humanitarian aid is quite literally Hamas's missile defense. They don't need an actual Iron Dome system. You just have the human shields. And done. So, that's what they have there. And then there's the fourth bill, which is a mix of TikTok ban and some other stuff. Now, there's a fifth bill that was going to be something, I haven't read the text, but it was at least billed as along the lines of H.R. 2, the House passed border security bill prohibiting, you know, parole and catch and release and you know, cut funding for the NGOs and this sort of thing. So, but brilliantly, so what it's designed to do, so some people want to vote for the Israel bill. Now, really, no one should because it's actually a Hamas bill. Some want to vote for the Taiwan bill. Again, that could be reprogrammed to Ukraine. But most, you know, conservatives don't want to vote for Ukraine, obviously. So they have it designed that all the rule that they want to write out to the floor is that you vote on each one separately, but then it has the effect of once they're all passed. I mean, this is how deviant it is. They're all sewed together. Except for one, the border bill. It's just it's just a cover bill that does not get sewed into the Ukraine bill. Now, you would think, I mean, look, obviously, I don't support the notion that we have to give $60 billion to the Ukraine grift to get border security. I don't believe in that. I believe we have such a popular sentiment behind it. We should have done that as a standalone, holding other bills hostages, the budget, other authorization bills. The notion that we have to do this, but fine. Once you're hell-bent on doing that, that you do the full $95 billion in foreign aid. This is the full Senate bill. It's not even like a 1% compromise. You're giving the Biden administration everything they want. And indeed, the Biden administration put out a statement of administration policy, fully whipping for it, backing it, meaning so much so that it's not like Biden has to, or Johnson has to rely on 30 Democrats to, you know, you lose some Republicans. They have the full support of Democrats. I mean, I guess the Israel bill, like the Ilhan Omar caucus will still vote no, but most Democrats will vote for it because it has the Hamas aid in it. I mean, you know, there's like 50, maybe 50 Democrats that can't bring themselves to vote for anything that has Israel officially in it. But the point is, you know, the Ukraine bill will get unanimous support, and they're going to support this. So you would think that at least if you're commensurate with how much you're giving the Democrats, then it gives you leverage. You're like, look, you got to have border in there. Now, mind you, as you well know, I disagree with the whole notion that H.R. 2 is the way to do it. It needs to be state deportations to fully clarify that states could uphold any law against illegal aliens up to and including deportation, cut off any funding for them, you know, like K through 12 education. So explicitly reverse Plyler v. Doe, things like that. But, okay, so, you know, H.R. 2, they're making sure that that's a standalone vote that doesn't, so it's just a fake bill. I mean, this is how unbelievable these people are. But folks, this is what happens when you take our budding momentum against the system last decade and you hijack it with Trump and his merry band of white trash, retarded losers, and you allow Trump to join forces with them and then quell the rebellion on the right for 8 years on legislation, on primaries, on just even just forging and building ideas and strategies, and you make our guys distracted and mind-numb and irrelevant, incompetent, impotent, and then even enjoy the anal rape. This is what happens. They are more emboldened than they ever were because, okay, here's the deal. John Boehner and Paul Ryan never did this to us. This is a level beyond anything, okay? To use control of the Republican House to needlessly affirm viciously against your own party the top priorities of your administration, not just in what they view as like, oh, we can't have a government shutdown like a must-pass bill, but as a standalone proposition. This is new. Because they all knew they could never go quite that far because there would have been a rebellion. How has Johnson been able to do ground and pound every week against our people? Because he knows he has the support of Trump. And why does he have the support of Trump and maintains that support? Because of the code of silence that's nearly ubiquitous among any conservative with a following and influence to not utter a word about where this is coming from. Let me illustrate to you just how we keep doing this. Okay? And I just want to say, the notion that with everything going on in this country, with the inflation and invasion in particular, that Democrats would be able to pass $100 billion in foreign aid at this moment. This is a classic example of how I tell you that Republicans are negative efficacy, and this notion that it's always better to have Republicans is not true. Democrats need Republican buy-in. It is so... I want you to understand, if you only had a Democrat party doing everything they're doing, there would be a wholesale revolution, rebellion. Republicans perfectly quell that in two ways. Number one, by fake fighting the left, it gives the left a punching bag to blame things on, even when they're not, you know, actively voting with the Democrats, but just, you know, the Republicans being so ineffective and having people with all this baggage, so they're able to blame it on Trump and his baggage. But then also, they have buy-in. They have bipartisan buy-in. Bipartisan buy-in is worth its price in gold, because there's always pendulum swings commensurate with how transformational and how controversial your initiative is. There's going to be blowback. What the Republican Party is designed to do is to shield them from their blowback. The one time they didn't do it initially was with Obamacare, and it was so clarifying, and we had the greatest election in 2010. Unfortunately, afterwards, they made peace with it, and now Trump is out there ass-kissing the ACA, as he calls it. So that's why we lost that. But at the time, the reason why Democrats got slaughtered is because not a single Republican would own it. Now, why are we at this point? Why are we at this point after 8 years of the greatest Lord Savior, Cheeto Jesus, in charge of the party? And the reason is for something I want to share with you. Something that rhymes with Tucker tweeted out his latest episode. Episode 95. Why do the reddest states produce the dumbest, most liberal Republicans? Why aren't John Cornyn and Dan Crenshaw bagging groceries at Walmart? Jesse Kelly has thoughts about this. And so he had Jesse Kelly on. And look, Jesse has been consistent about this, and he's a friend, and Jesse himself seems to have supported DeSantis. So he gets it. But Tucker himself, like, what's so bizarre about these people is that I could respect them more if they would completely dance around our issues. But every once in a while, they actually indulge our points. Like, yeah, why do we have all these red states? I'll tell you why, Tucker. There's two reasons why, but they're kind of related. Number one, because every time we have a primary and people step forth to challenge them, you ignore it and don't focus on it. And number two is, every time people step forward to challenge, Trump endorsed every damn one of them. I mean, literally, we just pointed out with Mike McCall. Every one of them. By the way, John Cornyn is a great example. I worked to oppose John Cornyn in 2014. He was running for re-election. I guess that was his third term he was running for back then. I believe I think he was elected in 2002, his third term, and he got under 60%. Okay, so not that far away from a runoff. I mean, you know, like 9 points away from a runoff. So we saw vulnerability there. And we figured 6 years later, headed into the 2020 election, that was the last time he was up. He's up again in 2026. We thought we could finally do something with him. But the year before, already in 2019, Trump preemptively endorsed him. And you, Tucker, had nothing to say about it. See, I have a paper trail. You could do a Twitter search on my Twitter account and Cornyn and go back more than a decade. Okay, there's a paper trail with me. You want to know any rhino that the MAGA people claim to hate? I was on them from day one before it was cool. So, but again, I'm not trying to hit people on their records. I'm all about forward-looking thinking. If we would get together and say, look, we're screwed. The Republican Party is screwed. Trump is making it just as screwy. Let's build something new and let's work together. If Tucker is going to have an epiphany, I am all for that. But it's not just in the past. It's right now. We talked about this with the first tranche of primaries. There's some more coming up, mainly after June, in June and after thereafter. But there are some in May. The next primary is Indiana, May 7th. There are a bunch of House seats up there. Unfortunately, the Senate and governor's race are kind of die-cast. I mean, Jim Banks, better or for worse, he's going to get the Senate. And Brown, who is vacating the Senate, is running for governor. He'll definitely be an upgrade from Holcomb, but, you know, not exactly. I mean, again, he's the type of guy that if you pressure and you build support, you'll get better stuff from him. But if you don't, he'll drift. But it is what it is. But there are a bunch of House seats. There's three open seats, Republican seats, and then there's a fourth. Baird in District 4 is a rhino incumbent running for re-election. There is a challenger there that we need to support. My point is, it's like right now, we had a challenger against Wicker in Mississippi. Okay? We have challengers against the Nebraska senators running for election, at least one of them. We had a bunch of House seats. And Trump is endorsing against every single one of them. So, like, Tucker's like, yeah, what is it with all these red state rhinos? Literally, while we have primaries ongoing with challengers, with nobody paying attention to them, and 9 times out of 10, Trump endorsing the bad guy. So nothing changes. It's just so funny watching conservatives simultaneously tear their hair out about the numerous leftist sitting Republicans, you know, sitting in office, while literally sleeping through this year's primaries and even championing every opportunity to just anoint the most well-known Republican. Like, that's like, oh, these same people will be like, oh, is the guy in Montana, Jim Justice in West Virginia? It's like, we all, in the abstract, claim to understand that these Republicans are worthless, uniparty, that's become a thing. But then you wonder why we have them is because the new crop with the new election right in front of you, you're playing the same damn game. Oh, Daniel, we just got to get the seat. Jim Justice. So we just automatically go to like the most well-known name. I'm not even talking about Larry Hogan in Maryland. Fine, like I have what to say about that, but who cares? I'm going to win that anyway. I'm talking about red states that you're going, that the Republican is going to win. But they have this notion that just jump upon. It's like right now you have Alex Mooney as a Freedom Caucus member. He opposes Ukraine funding. He is running for Senate. Jim Justice is the guy with Trump's support. He is a leftist on every issue, a big, big passionate supporter of Ukraine, so much so that he was giving West Virginia resources, which is a poor state, to Ukraine. And Trump enthusiastically endorsed him. And Tucker's like, what do we have all these people? Well, there's one thing if like, okay, so we have these people, but now we learned our lesson and all the new red states were buckling down. No, we're electing new people that from the minute they step foot there in that Senate, they will be to the left of Mitch McConnell from day one and will only drift thereafter with Trump support. Everything's in the abstract, but when you actually have it in front of you, they're either nowhere to be seen or actively or tacitly subverting it. What do we have after all the... You're right, because after we've now gone through... It takes three cycles to go through the Senate. It's staggered. 6-year terms, and they stagger 2-2-2. A third of the Senate is up. Every single rhino that is there has now gone through at least one election under Trump's stewardship of the Republican Party. And with one or two exceptions, he has endorsed every single one of them, sometimes on his second round already. With some of them. Like, some of them he's done this cycle plus 2018, for example. Like, what do you want from me? Am I supposed to just ignore this? And just keep up the code of silence? I could say what all my colleagues are saying today and just dance around where the power actually resides. But until we admit this and recognize it, we're going to continue playing the same game. We all have clarity when you're watching the Republicans stab us in the back. Oh, they're just as bad as Democrats, maybe even worse. But then when you get to the primaries, it's like, oh, we, okay, R versus D. Okay, your brain is on the general election no matter what. And then you convince yourself that we just have to pick the most well-known Republican that we could get our hands on for the primary. Even in a state where you don't have to, you know, have a particularly amazing candidate to win in the general. Not that I'm admitting or acknowledging or conceding the fact that somehow you need a rhino to carry a competitive state, but I'm just saying you don't even have to get into that argument. But this is what it is. It's all in the abstract. Abstract click servitism. You know, you contrast the Democrats to Republicans. Boy, is it stark. The same day Johnson was destroying the party with Trump's support, the man that everyone in the conservative base idolizes, destroying the party on behalf of the top issue sets of the Biden administration, Democrats were in unison. All 51 Democrat senators voted motion to table the impeachment articles from the House of Mayorkas. Okay? That's what unity looks like. And that's why I always said the impeachment was such a stupid distraction. I said, you're going to look like idiots. It's going to get mowed down in the Senate. You don't have the votes. It's the must-pass bills that matter. Where they, see, here you need them to pass something. You're never going to get them to pass something without leverage because, without a must-pass bill, because they're unified. Whereas with the budget, they want you to pass that. With FISA, they want you to pass that. And with Ukraine, they want you to pass that. Now, some of this stuff we should never be passing, but to the extent we do, at least get something for it. But again, this is not a strategic disagreement. This is not a political calculation. This is a values issue. One thing that I find amazing is you watch these Republicans and it's like, our country is in so much pain. And you look at the gap of like the enthusiasm gap between the way they approach our issues, and they don't fight for them, but even like just rhetorically indulge, Biden on the border, versus this, and they're like, this is World War II and Hitler all over again. And it's so random because, you know, that was the sentiment when Putin initially invaded, like, what is it, like 26 months ago? And we're like, oh my gosh, he's just going to climb through Europe. And now it's a joke. Again, he doesn't have the ability to go through Europe, but likewise, Ukraine doesn't have the ability to get back that land. It's straight up. There's nothing you're going to do. It's a stalemate in terms of those lands. There is no compelling reason, even from their ideological perspective, to get involved. And yet, like I said, there is a hellfire rush. I mean, to the point that they're willing to keep the House in over the weekend, which they never do, to vote on something that has been held up for a year. It's so weird. But that's the problem. They don't share our values. Let me explain a dirty little secret to you. If Trump were 20% of what his supporters make him out to be, and opponents, by the way, the idolatry is both ways. It's just bizarre. Both the people that hate him and love him project something upon him that doesn't exist. But if he were anywhere like that, there is no way you could have the Republican Party this embedded in its old ways and succeed. Because Trump is that popular. Everyone's like, yeah, look at the primary. He crushed DeSantis. You're right, he did. Exactly. The voters want Trump. The voters do want Trump. And that's why he has so much clout. You're right. Pretty much the only places we win is when he endorses our guys. When he doesn't, we don't win. I agree. All the more so, it makes no sense. How could they get away with betrayal after betrayal if the top gun in the party is really on the other side? Well, I think you understand that's a rhetorical question, because he's not. He ranges from actually being on their side to just being indifferent and not caring. Punchline here. Okay? This is not about, oh, so Daniel, what are you going to do? We vote for Biden? Oh, you want Biden? Nothing to do with that. Like I said, vote for him. Donate your money to him if you want. Organize for him. He certainly needs it. I don't care. But let's not lie to each other and think that somehow this is going to get us anywhere. Right? It's not mutually exclusive. You could vote for him, but largely the die is cast. And a lot of that is Trump's fault in terms of his messaging, his image, his lack of discipline, his lack of a campaign, and the stupidity of nominating a guy like that. I mean, it is what it is. Don't blame me. I tried to avoid that. But we have so many primaries coming up down the ballot. We have state issues. Like, let me give you an example. Louisiana just voted on HB 288, very important bill that requires a state coroner to put immunization status and history on any death certificate. So that way we could see the types and timing of various vaccinations, and you could do a lot of statistical analysis with that and start drawing correlation, because it's a very important thing that we need to get to the bottom of, not just with the COVID vaccine, we already know what it does. But really, you know, like, what is happening with some of these other vaccines? We really need to get the truth on that. I mean, there's nothing more important than that. People need clarity. every human being born is inundated with all this stuff, which ones, if any, are needed or not? And that is that is, and which ones are harmful? This is a big pro-life issue. Nobody in this audience is getting an abortion. Whereas this stuff, we're all kind of stuck with this. And what are we going to do with it? You know that that bill failed 50-51. Freedom Caucus brought it up. It failed by one vote. Republicans have a supermajority. I don't know where Landry was, the governor, if he publicly endorsed the bill. But you understand there is so much life-altering legislation that hangs in the balance every day in these red states, or even if it's not during session, but like policies at the gubernatorial, at the executive level, that if we had just a little bit more of this organized click-servitism in the abstract being actually prudent, principled conservatism in concrete, tangible reality, focusing on this stuff, if something that rhymes with Tucker would, you know, like actually focus on the red state primaries and legislation like we do, we would have a different country. And then Tucker has his own ecosystem, you know, with these guests and everything. They would focus on it downstream. You know, Tucker, look in a damn mirror. Again, I am not about browbeating people over the past. If I were able to shake hands with these people, I would wish nothing more, and I wouldn't hold the DeSantis primary against them. Let's get in a room. Let's admit to ourselves, like, we're screwed. Okay, this is not working. Trump's not working for us. It is what it is at this point. That's fine. Okay, vote for him. Vote. I don't care. Could we all work together to wield our influence over red state primaries and legislation? Is that too much to ask? Well, evidently, it is too much to ask. And folks, till tomorrow, that's just the way it is, whether you like it or not.